Officer Schnee, please come to order. Let the record show, Sergeant McKay, Sergeant Zlewski, Senator Lass, and myself present. First bill on floor today is House Bill 163, Anti-Harassment of Hunters. Representative Schultz.
Fish or game or the habitat of fish or game with the intent of hindering or preventing a person lawfully engaged in preparing or attempting to lawfully engage. So right there, it's not your intent to, you know, if it's your intent to keep me up all night, to keep me from going hunting, or come over and pull the tent pegs down and all that kind of stuff, yes, I should have some legal recourse.
No, but let's say you come out of your tent around 10:30 at night and say, I'm getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, but you guys shut up. So my friends are a pretty rowdy bunch when they went to drinking dinner. So at that point, my friends are knowingly interfering with your preparation for hunting. I just want anything established clearly on the record that this cannot be used to harass people who are not directly interfering. I mean, it seems to me that I don't mind what you're talking about, but even though I don't like the, you're shaking your head, so I'll let you finish.
No, absolutely no. It wouldn't, wouldn't harass me, wouldn't be part of it. I mean, you just tell the guy to go fly kite or whatever.
Or shoot.
Or shooting.
For the sake of the record, those are facetious remarks, I assume, and we're not implying through the example of Senator Fisher that he has any friends that would drink beer, so. Any other members of the committee have questions? Centralize.
Madam Chair, I think I like to go. I get on my favorite fishing pole. Get up and get my lure, and God help anybody else who sits on the fish and harasses me or my fish. Tongue in cheek, I say.
Centralize.
I just wondering, I'm just questioning C, which says a person may not enter or remain on public or private land. I just wonder if the state has authority to go on someone's private land and run somebody off because they're violating, making a little noise or whatever. I can understand on public land, but I just don't know if...
On private land?
Private land.
Private land. That was brought about in discussions with... we visited about this with Tony Baskin and Jerry Ward quite extensively pertaining to, and Jerry Ward very emphatically wanted private land included in this because of the native land claims.
Oh, does that doesn't necessarily make it right?
Yeah.
It's private land, whether it's Vaughn's natives or you or myself, whoever I might be. But we're saying the state can go in and do this on private land even though the owner might not want them to do it. Is that what we're saying?
If I may, this has no local private land. It's still at the, if you don't want people hunting, fishing, trapping, doing whatever on your land, you simply tell them that there's no hunting, fishing, trapping, or camping, or anything else in your land, and no one can, you know, do anything about that.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying they can't. It says here, you can't engage upon this activity whether it's on public land or private land. I'm just wondering, the reason for, I can understand why we'd be concerned with public lands, public domain, but why are we asking that private land be protected in that manner also? It's my land. If my friends are there harassing someone, that might be all right with me. It's my land. I don't want the state to come under when I'm on.
What if you're fishing in your private fishing pond and somebody that you don't want on there is on there harassing you?
Well, we don't have a problem. It's my land. They come on my land. There's obviously all kinds of ways I have to get them rid of them. But I'm saying that the state's going to make that determination, whether or not I approve. That's the question I have with this. I just wanted the rationale behind that.
The person will make that determination as to whether he's being harassed or not.
It doesn't say that. It doesn't say the owner. It says private land, period.
What line are you referring to?
Line 23. Seeing ghosts or what? So, you know,
how should you control that?
Madam Chair. Book line 23.
Line 23. I don't see how anybody would go on somebody's private land if they weren't asked to the state.
All right, I think you're talking about private. I don't think that the state's in a position, even if somebody asked them to go into private land. I think we're talking about civil matters. I really question on the private land whether we can get involved. This is no criminal action.
Madam Chair, I'm a little confused. The way I read that section, I'm a private landholder. I'm quietly enjoying my own fishing hole. You're coming from the outside and you're harassing me and keeping me from getting my fish. Is that what we're saying here? That's what I read it to say.
I'm saying that whether you have this law or not, you could have that person evicted off your land. Mm-hmm. But if it's public land, certainly the public has people have a vested interest in protecting that land for all public people, public use. But the situation I'm talking about is if I had a large tract of land, I had friends in there who were fishing or hunting or whatever, and they might be disturbing someone who's upon this land without my permission, without me knowing it. And then the state says, well, my friends are arresting this other people even though I'm not there. The state has a right to come in and throw them off.
The person that is there on your land without permission is there in trespass. Because it's your land.
But what's the point of having private land in there then? It's my land. I can handle myself without calling in anybody.
I don't see that their license does any harm or any good in that.
I just look for rationale as well.
I can see where if you had large tracts of private land, you might request assistance. State has a right to go on private land or even into a private home when there's disturbance of the peace and this kind of stuff. I don't see any big deal on that. Of course, that's not anybody else.
Okay. Let me, if I may, again, if I can get back to the native land. It was brought to my attention that a person's out hunting, and now to hunt on native lands around the state today, for the most part, you don't have to have permission to go into those areas and hunt. Tetland Reservation, maybe they ask you to check with them to let them know, or otherwise you're in trespass. But for the other native lands, they have the option. They could close it down if they wanted to. If that is private land, okay, but everyone goes out and hunts and fishes and everything. The fishing and everything else on that native land. If I'm out there hunting, fishing, camping, doing whatever, and someone else is trying to keep me from doing that, that I can take legal recourse against those people. I have a way of going about something. And that's all this bill does, is provides an avenue for legal recourse for someone if they are being harassed.
Are there further questions? Does that help?
Madam Chair, that creates the problem. If that person coming on with the harassing has an ownership interest, right, then it's a totally different thing. And I don't think that's what we want to do, is to pass a law that takes away any ownership interest. And I don't think that's the intent in the case that Representative Schultz used. The thing I would like to ask, and there's somebody here from Fish and Game, it's a little different, and I don't know if you can respond to it or not, but the situation we had out in the bay a few years over price disputes, and there were charges, and I was chair of a task force that went out to look at some issues that had been raised. If somebody is harassing you because you're, say, not part of following the bargaining talks, and you go out and you're lawfully fishing, does this affect any of the existing law? Does this change what your rights under the law are now? It seems like if you were being harassed, as the claim was being made out there, that you have rights under the law now in that case. And I just wonder if any difference comes about because of the passage of this law. Perhaps I can ask that of the department.
And they would probably be able to answer that better. However, let's just say you were out fishing and the commercial fishermen didn't want you fishing there, and they come through with a boat and cut your line.
Yeah, or
okay, that's harassment. Right. Okay, that's harassment. And it was pointed out to me, if I could just, on a note here. And if I'm hunting on your land with permission, and then Joe Blow comes in and starts harassing me, then that person is in violation. First of all, he's in trespass. And then he is also, I've got some legal recourse to pursue some, legally, some way of preventing him from harassing me more.
Is he really in trespass if it's not posted? Maybe that's where the protection comes in.
To my knowledge, you do not have to post do not have to post your land to keep people off of your land.
There's a man that knows my question.
But I'm not sure, because signs are tore down all the time, I know that. And you put up no hunting, no fishing, no trespassing, or whatever.
Is that a fishing?
Just a question, I don't know much about law, but if it's a case whether you have the trespassing signs up or whatever, you're talking private property, if somebody's there, am I correct in saying that the state does not have the obligation to remove them? You have an obligation through the civil procedure to take action. If that's true, then maybe what the senator's saying here, we should strip out the word private period and just stay with the public.
Again, if I may, this was discussed, and we went through the debate pretty heavily on private land, and it was determined that you own the land, you have certain rights. You may have permission to be on my land, and everyone else here maybe have permission, but there may be someone else that doesn't want you to be doing or engaging or camping there and begins harassing you. Okay. First of all, if they come onto that land, they're trespassing. They haven't checked with them. Second of all, you're hunting on that land. You have legal recourse. You can go and say, okay, this person's harassing me. It would not be up to the state to come out and pick them off that land, but it would be up to you to file the charges against them for harassment, and then it would be up to the state to come out and say, okay, you know.
So, Madam Chairman, if I own this big piece of land, these people are gone, and somebody comes and harasses my friends, okay, what I'm saying is I can't go to the state and say, you come and evict these people. I never knew that as a private landowner. I can demand the state to come in and pick people from my private land.
Yeah, sure.
Sure you can.
Whether they're harassing you or not.
So, they're just picking the flatfish at that time.
They're
driving our snow machine.
Maybe it would be better to direct some of the questions here to some of the other people.
There'll be others to testify, maybe, like to ask questions there. Are there further questions? Thank you very much, Representative. I know, it seems like it's the bee bears, the bee bills, the bear bills, and the hunting bills that always get us into fun.
I find it.
Yeah. Where's my list? Please, Ron, would you help me? The next person to testify is Dennis Kelso from Department of Fish and Game.
My name is Dennis Kelso. I'm acting deputy commissioner for the Department of Fish and Game. I'll follow your instructions, Madam Chair, to keep my remarks short and sweet.
Thank you.
The reason we're appearing is to indicate our interest in this kind of protection for hunters and fishermen and for other people who are engaging in lawful activities involving fish and game resources. We're very concerned that those not be impeded. The question of whether this bill provides additional protection that would not be available under the rest of the Alaska Criminal Code or other legal recourse, I think is probably better left for the Department of Law. And although I know she didn't come to testify today, Gail Horetsky probably is the best resource for that. I do think I might mention that the bill does provide both civil and criminal penalties and the opportunity to come in explicitly under an authorization for civil damages, I think, is probably somewhat different than exists under current criminal law. I would suggest that the committee might wish to take a close look at a couple of areas, and again, the Department of Law would be most appropriate for these analyses. One of them is whether there are any difficulties with constitutional guarantees such as freedom of speech. I'm not suggesting that there are, but those are the kinds of things that make statutes of this nature difficult to enforce. This is a specific intent kind of formulation, the Department of Law could give you a much better idea than I. The other is, it has just to do with the pragmatics of enforcement. And again, I would defer that whole area. This kind of interference has been a problem in other states. To date, our experience has been pretty minimal. I would defer to your own experiences with your constituents, but we don't hear a lot of complaints. Occasionally, there are some user conflicts, and I think the example that Senator Sturzelewski offered is a very good one. But that's as short as I can make.
Thank you very much. Are there questions on the part of members of the committee? Dick, proceed.
Just one question. If I park another boat, do I have problems? Am I interfering? Am I harassing them?
That's a very good question. I think the language requiring knowing section A, subsection A differs somewhat from subsection B. They both include the word knowingly. Subsection B includes intent to hinder or prevent. I suspect that would be a big factor in whether you, if you cork someone, whether that would be...
What are you talking about when you cork somebody?
Somebody has a saying on that, but mine went
wrong. I do like to
obviously, I'm trying to hinder them. I'm trying to catch the fish they're after.
I suspect
it happens all the time.
I suspect
if there was a criminal violation every time someone was corked, we'd be having a very difficult time in the Fish and Wildlife Protection Division. I haven't talked with Representative Schultz. I don't think it was his intent to address that kind of activity, but I'll let him speak for himself.
It does cover that activity, though.
You
wouldn't want to accept it, would you?
No.
Make it
I've always seen my friends in jail.
There's a whole, as you know, Senator Lyson, there's a whole range of activities that happen on the grounds that could be interpreted.
Right.
Whether you're corking somebody or wrap their boat with your net or cut their line, there's a lot of things that can happen that are ambiguous, and sometimes they're pretty hotly contested. They don't necessarily reflect a knowing intent to harass.
Do you engage in that kind of... Thank you very much. Other questions? Further questions from members of the committee? Thank you. Department of Public Safety? Anyone here? Ron Somerville?
Madam Chairman, my name is Ron Somerville. I'm testifying as Legislative Committee Chairman for the Alaska Sportsman's Council, a statewide organization affiliated with 31 organizations within the state. We'd just like to indicate strong support for this type of legislation. I might note that, as has been mentioned, a number of states have adopted legislation very similar to this. This has been expanded somewhat to include the wording is Representative Schultz in commercial traffic, or commercial fishing and subsistence hunting and trapping and these sort of things. I think what you're seeing is a preventative concern by a number of people who love to go out and engage in hunting with them on unposted private lands or public lands or whatever. And you're seeing in other states things like purposeful attempts to stop trapping, for instance. Anti-trapping is becoming a bigger and bigger issue. And I think we want to make it very clear that hunting, fishing, trapping, or whatever nature in Alaska is a valid, lawful pursuit and shouldn't be tampered with as long as it's done under our laws and regulations. I think the intent of this is not in any way to impede or restrict the rights of the private landowner. I don't see that as a concern. I think the word knowingly is a major insertion or major part of this because that requires a lot of proof.
Well, I just noticed something. If I'm going up my creek and I see that on snow machines, say, and I see that a trapper's trapping out the beaver dam up in front of it, and I go and knowingly destroy that trap, then I'm open for this, right?
On your land, Senator?
No.
Anywhere?
Just on the creek. I don't think the creek belongs to anybody, does it?
If you're interfering with that lawful, again, the word is lawful, attempt, I guess you could do this.
Other questions? Part of the members of the committee. Thank you very much, Ron. Is there anyone else here that wished to testify on this, or would anybody from the Department of Law like to comment on questions that's come up?
Unless there are specific questions.
Richard, do you have a specific question to the Department of Law?
Present time.
Anyone else to testify on this bill? Senator Fisher, would you join us a moment, please?
Chair, thank you.
What is the intention of the committee, or what are the wishes of the committee? The chair would accept the motion.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I would move the bill with individual recommendations.
Is there objection? Thank you very much. The next bill before us is Senate Bill 272. It's a special appropriation for payment of grant to the municipality of Anchorage for expansion of the Ship Creek treatment plant and phase two design and construction of the Aklutna Water Project. How's that for a title? Senator Fates.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jan Fates. I represent Senate District E, South Anchorage, in the State Senate. There are three parts to this bill. I'll go over three parts briefly, and I'd like to introduce to you Bob Smith, who's general manager of the Municipality of Anchorage Water and Wastewater Utility. And he has brought with him a detailed analysis of all three of these particular projects. And do you have a committee substitute in front of you, Madam Chairman?
We have a substitute that's proposed. It's not accepted.
Okay.
I was wondering if you were going to propose that.
Yes. If that's the will of the committee, I would like to do that very much. Now, I'll tell you why in just one moment. Bob Smith is here to answer any of your questions. There's been a lot of debate, particularly in the other body, that perhaps the Aklutna project isn't the best one. Perhaps there are alternate members or methods or whatever. And he has provided for you in your backup material a study of almost every alternate method that you can think of. And he will be able to answer any of your technical questions that you have on the alternate methods that have been proposed in the other body, on Aklutna, that kind of thing. The number one priority, very important priority, for short-term needs of Anchorage is Ship Creek. I'd like to comment that very few times our governments do things ahead of schedule or try to plan ahead for needs. And I think what we're seeing here in this water package is some long-term water needs for Anchorage through the year 2025. So the municipality and the water utility is looking ahead and beginning to plan their long-term water needs, and I think we need to commend them for that. I think usually a lot of governments come to the legislature after the fact in a huge emergency, and maybe not the necessary time is needed or is used to study various projects, and sometimes we fund projects without all the necessary study, and I'm glad to see that Anchorage is not in that situation in some of these water projects. The first portion of the bill is the Ship Creek portion. The total cost of the project is $12 million. The bill is asking for, the committee substitute is asking for $7.4 million. And the city knows that they have to put up a portion of this money. They've got, and Mr. Smith will talk to you about a bond package that with the seed money they're talking about for all of these projects. So he will be talking about that bonding also. The expanding of Ship Creek gives us the short-term water needs that we need primarily in Eagle River, Chugach area, and then in South Anchorage. Those are the two parts of the city that are in critical needs right now with water, and the Ship Creek upgrade will alleviate those needs. It expands the plant from 10 million gallons a day to 24 million gallons a day, and this will supply Anchorage until Aklutna is ready, and they're planning to have Aklutna online by 1988 if the schedule or the time frame goes through. The next one is the Aklutna project, and you've heard a lot about that, but possibly none of the details. The total cost of this particular phase is $35 million, but the city is requesting $25 million. And that $25 million is scaled down, but it hasn't scaled down the size of the pipe, because if there's an alternate method used, or if the legislature or the city decides that maybe there should be an alternate plan to Aklutna, that water line that runs between Ship Creek and Eagle River has to be put in irregardless, and this $25 million will do this. So even if an alternate plan is selected in the coming years, this money will not be wasted. It will not be turned out. It is needed for that water pipe between Ship Creek and Eagle River at this time. The The project eventually will draw water from the Clutha Lake, which will be treated and subsequently transmitted to Anchorage and other communities along the line. So we're not just talking about Anchorage here. We're talking about Peters Creek. We're talking about Chugach. We're talking about Eagle River. And we're even talking about South Anchorage, Girtwood, Rabbit Creek area. So they're planning an area-wide use of this water, not just a municipality use. The new water source is needed immediately for Clutha, Chugach, and Eagle River. Within 5 years, a supplemental source of water will be needed for Anchorage. So right now, the need is north of Anchorage, and this is what this pipe will do for that. And in 5 years, or even a little longer, the main city of Anchorage will be needed simply because of the growth rate and the building rate. I feel, having looked at Mr. Smith's study and the alternate methods, that Clutha Lake is the most environmentally sound and the quickest long-term remedy to Anchorage. And we're talking about through the year 2025. Now, in your committee substitute that is before you, that is proposed, you have a takeover of Central Alaska Utilities. The city is in negotiations with Central Alaska Utilities now. They are very close to a settlement agreement of purchasing for, looks like, a very good price, a very reasonable price, a private utility company. What this will, this part of the bill is endeared particularly to my constituents in South Anchorage, because predictions is that we'll literally lower their water rate with the added members coming online substantially, almost as between 25% and 50% decrease in their water bill as a result of this takeover. It will provide uniform water source then for the whole city bowl, rather than some of the residents being on a private water system and some of the residents being on the city water system. Additionally, the customer base to support the Ship Creek monies, the additional monies used for the Ship Creek expansion and the long-term water source development, the overall rate reductions will be felt by adding in this south section of Anchorage, this fast-growing section of Anchorage. The added number of customers will eventually make those expansions to the water system lower, the rates lower in the long run. So I think it serves everybody. It'll serve the old part of Anchorage, and it'll serve the new part of Anchorage. The new part of Anchorage gets its rate decrease in the short term. The older part of Anchorage will get its rate decrease in the years ahead. If there are no technical, I can't answer technical questions, but if there are philosophical questions from the committee, I'd be glad to answer them. Otherwise, I'd like to introduce Mr. Smith.
Senator Fates, you were talking about the section expanding the water, you know, to the areas surrounding the city and upgrading. Do you know what the rate being paid in your district is now? Is that metered, or is there a standard rate?
It's a CAU. You're talking about Central Alaska Utilities has a standard rate, and the last time I was home, it's close to $45, I believe. I like $42.50, $45, $47.50. But I'm on the lower end of the hillside, and I don't know if they have a climbing rate as it goes up. I'm considered lower hillside, so I don't know what it would be further out.
You know, it's my sympathies are with you. However, I pay $74 for water a month, whether I use it or not, as being a part of a service area in water, and we find, you know, both of our major communities are in this same type of situation, with individuals having to carry the cost of bonding the company and carrying. We had to bond at the time at 22% interest. Maybe we should have had the foresight that you were having, which I commend you for. Members of the committee, do you have questions of Senator Fate?
I'm interested in the financing package, how much Anchorage is going to bond, and so on.
He can tell you all of that. There are two alternatives, and he'll be glad to answer those questions. May I introduce Mr. Smith now, Madam Chairman?
Before you leave, though, you are proposing that we adopt the committee substitute.
Yes, ma'am, I sure am. And that would then reduce the equivalent amount to $25 million to bring in the Central Alaska Utilities amount. So
making,
we're not increasing the cost of the bill.
Making the total cost $37.4 rather than the $45
million. Right.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Senator Bishop.
I will move that the committee adopt the proposed committee substitute for Senate Bill number 272 resources.
Is there objection?
I'm Bob Smith, employed by the municipality of Anchorage as the general manager of the water and wastewater utility there. Senator Fakes did a did an excellent job of describing the three projects. I'll just briefly mention a few more things, and then I'll let you direct me with your questions to the areas that you're more specifically interested in. Senator Fakes is billed for water bimonthly, and so her bill, your question to her is to the water rate, the amount that she told you is a bimonthly billing. The monthly billing is about $22 a month for Central Alaska Utilities. As compared to the Anchorage Water Utility,
mine is less.
The Anchorage Water Utility charges $12 a month.
What's the amount?
$22 a month in Central Alaska Utilities.
No wonder we can't get people to move to Fair.
That's for a flat rate water customer. Compared to a flat rate water customer in Anchorage, for the Anchorage Water Utility, as well. Ship Creek Water Treatment Plant expansion project is a project that we've had in capital improvement program since 1977. And for one reason or another, there have been many problems in getting it funded. The Anchorage Water Utility last year applied for a state grant under the Department of Environmental Conservation Grant Program, which is a continuing program that's been in effect for about 10 years, which pays 50% of eligible water and sewer projects. We were approved at that time, but we needed to show a local share. We couldn't raise local share, so we decided that this project was so important, we needed to go forward with it. We funded over $2 million locally with revenue bonds to begin the pre-engineering and the final design engineering for this project. That effort is currently going on today. The final design will be completed later this year, and that's wholly funded from the Municipality of Anchorage. In the structure of putting together the capital program for the Municipality of Anchorage and getting input from the people, one of the input from the people were that the two things that were most needed in Anchorage was roads, and I guess that probably applies throughout the state, and water. And the way that the municipal priority list has been put together is water and roads have been made priority. And this project was, I believe on the current list, is priority number one. What we're looking for here is $7,400,000. This, along with the funds that we'll raise through revenue bonds, the Municipality of Anchorage is regulated by the Alaska Public Utilities Commission, and we finance our construction through revenue bond sales, and we intend to finance the remainder of this project with a revenue bond sale, which would, of course, be paid for by the rates of the utility.
How much was that bond? $3 million?
Three or five.
The bonding for this project will be approximately $5 million. The total project cost, exclusive of engineering, is about $12
million.
Yes, we see the municipality putting in half by paying the front of the engineering and by paying the bonding cost to the remainder of the construction. We're dealing with a 50-50 share from the municipality. The next project I'd like to speak to is the Eklutna project. The Eklutna project has some history to it. The long-range water studies for the Municipality of Anchorage started in 1972. There have been four that are rather extensive studies. I can provide you the specific information if you'd like it. The intent of the studies were to take a look from a comprehensive development plan point of view, what was going to happen to Anchorage in the future from a growth point of view, and what were we going to do in order to provide water for the future of Anchorage. Those studies were concluded essentially in 1979. In 1980, there was a grant applied for from the federal government, a coastal energy impact grant that was provided to us by the federal government. It totaled about $1,200,000. And with that, we did the specific studies and pre-engineering. We looked at where should we go for water. The previous studies had recommended we either go to Eagle River or to Eklutna. After that extensive study, which took about 18 months, recommendation was that we go to Eklutna to provide the water for Anchorage. Last year, we came to the legislature asking for seed money to get this project started from an engineering and final planning point of view. That was provided. $13,684,000 was provided last year. That money is currently all under contract. We've hired an engineering firm, James Montgomery Engineering, who are water engineers. They, along with three other local engineering firms in Anchorage, are doing the engineering and all the pre-work on this project. The total project cost is $220 million. It is the intent of the Municipality of Anchorage to continue, as we have for the last 10 to 12 years, to share in the cost of the project 50-50. We intend to raise money locally through general obligation bond sales to finance half of this project. We do have a problem, though, in doing that each year as we proceed through the project. Because we're regulated by the Alaska Public Utilities Commission, they will not allow us to recoup rates on any project, what we would normally term in utility building industry construction work in progress. You cannot charge the customer a rate for that until that plant is used and useful. So as long as it's under construction, you can't charge the customer. So there'd be no way if we were to have a bond sale, for instance, this year, with a project that was going to take 5 years to construct, for us to pay the interest on those bonds. You can't raise it through the rates because the last Public Utilities Commission won't let you charge the customer for that. So what we've proposed in a document that was delivered over 2 months ago in a briefing by myself conducted for the administration, and this document was delivered to the state legislature, we proposed financing alternatives and how we were going to approach this project. And then essentially this document said we're going to ask the state to fund $35 million this year, $58 million next year, and the following 2 years when the need is $62 million and $51 million, we'd raise that locally through general obligation bonds. Since then, of course, the number that we're asking for has been decreased to $25 million. And the reason that was decreased to $25 million, there were questions that were raised relative to, is Eclipna really the way to go? And we thought that we'd probably better do some more looking, which is what we're doing, and we lowered the amount of request to $25 million, which is strictly construction dollars to build a pipeline between our current water treatment plant in Anchorage to Eagle River. That pipeline, no matter how you raise, how you develop water in Anchorage, is going to have to be there. And we see that as a valid project for this $25 million, no matter what happens on where we get our water, whether we get it from Point McKenzie, whether we get it from the military reservation, or whether we take it from Eclipna, it's still a valid project. We also provided, about a month after this report, a legislative summary to all the members of the legislature with a letter in it from Tony Knowles, explaining, who is the mayor of Anchorage, explaining the priority that was applied to the project. There's also a resolution here that was passed by the Municipal Assembly demonstrating their 100% support for the project and some general description of the project. I've also provided to the committee, this is a brand new document that was completed last night, and it takes a look and gives you all of the information of all of the different studies that were done and all of the different areas that we've looked at. And I might just point out just a few highlights on the record.
If I might, sir, we have 10 minutes to hear another bill, and I don't intend to move this bill today to give people time to review the materials that you've gone. So may we just read that for ourselves, and you just tell us which page so that we can move on?
Exactly.
I don't mean to be rude to you.
On Central Alaska Utilities, I'll move on to that. This is a purchase of a private utility that's in the service portion of Anchorage. In the long-term water studies that were done, the recommendation was that the two utilities merge. That's from the Metropolitan Anchorage Urban Study that was completed in 79 and adopted by the Assembly then. And we're moving ahead with that. By having support from the state legislature for that effort, we will be able to reduce the water rate approximately $7 a month for the people that are served by that utility. That utility serves approximately 40% of the population of the Anchorage.
What is our water rate now?
$22 a month.
You reduce it to $7?
That's correct.
Madam Chair, I just want to pass out a compliment to Mr. Smith. I raised a question very early in the session about alternative methods of financing. I think a lot of times we get projects here where we get the first and then it turns out to be a huge project with a lot of capital. And the water utility for years has had some problems with its debt ratio, or not problems, but difficulty in the expansion to keep up with the need. And I think there's nothing that has been studied more, and I think this has been one of the just an excellent example of how you look to future growth, future needs, do an exhaustive job of it. So when you do it, you shouldn't be faced with huge cost overruns and questions of, well, if you'd only done something else. You utilize the groundwater, you know what you have there, you build on that, you're taking a good look at where the expansion areas are coming. I think you're really to be complimented. You've done a fine job on this.
I'll stop right there and let you ask me any questions that you may have.
Are there questions from members of the committee?
The bond issues you referred to, have they been put before the legislature?
No, they haven't.
What if they don't pass?
We haven't faced that.
And we put X amount of federal state dollars in because we have no happens.
The bond issue that we'll go to the voters for will be the first bond issue that will build something that gets us into that kind of a situation. This particular segment of the pipe that we're asking for this funding for does actually do something. When the expansion of the water treatment plant at Ship Reef, and with that pipe underground, we with a, something, a segment of the pipe out there that doesn't actually do anything. And so we see this first order issue as an extremely important issue. Number one, we feel we have to have demonstration from the people of Anchorage that they'll support this kind of project. And if we think that going on the ballot and forcing them to pull that handle and say, I'm willing to pay, and it's going to demonstrate whether, in fact, they do support or not support. We also need that to have a demonstration of the support from the administration that I work for and from the municipal assembly. And, of course, putting it on the bond ballot, I believe, will also do that. And so, to answer your question, this first bond issue that we're talking about going for the bond issue this year, bond ballot issue.
I'm talking about the big ones later on. Does the state ever going to be in a position where they have a substantial investment and then they go to the bonding market and they're refused? And then we'll have to work for a lot of these projects have been contingent upon bond issue passing in the future, and then the state's funds are available at that time. Is this what you envision?
No, I don't envision that we'd get ourselves into a situation without going to the people first and getting a commitment from the people through an election.
Before there's a large investment of state funds.
Absolutely.
Because once we get down that road, I'll use an example that we can't back up. And, no, you certainly do have your priorities in the right order. I just made this that was brought up a couple, 3 years ago when before we spent this large amount of money spent for other things. And this obviously is number one priority.
I might mention one other thing. You'll see it in the document. I serve on the national board, board of directors for the Association of Metropolitan Water Agencies, which are all cities, 250,000 or larger, or the largest city in the state, and I represent the state of Alaska on that board. And it was recently in Washington, D.C., and in your package you have a letter from Senator Ted Stevens that I've also asked back there that, and through the Association of Metropolitan Water Agencies that from the project be considered at the federal level. The response I received, which is in your package, indicates that it will be considered at the federal level. While it is difficult for him to give us a financial commitment, there are many bills that are being structured at the federal level to take care of what they're calling infrastructure rebuild for the whole of the United States. And we think that this project could fit in that those kinds of bills.
Mr. Chair, in response to Senator Lassen, in this particular project, for years the conventional wisdom and a lot of the studies said you'll go to what is Eklutna as, I mean, it was Eagle River as a different source. So in a sense, they were all looking here, but there were turned out to be very practical reasons why they had to look at an alternative. And it's taken a long time for this to evolve, really, to get the science to know what your groundwater capacity was and a whole lot of things. So it wasn't one that we could have, the municipality could have come in 1979 and given you what they have today. They just, it's a very large project, and the information was just not totally available, and it is now, so I think that's the reason.
Senator Fates, for your information, we'll bring this bill up again on Monday and act on it at that time while we give the committee that are not familiar with and the rest of the committee a chance to look at. We have requests from two committee members not to move a couple bills until Monday. I'm going to ask, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I wish we'd done that kind of planning in our town. The next bill before us, and I'm going to ask Senator McKay if he would chair in my absence since I have to get to the airport, is Senate Bill 279, and you have your packet, Senator, if you wish mine, it's here. There's the sign-up list right here, and the sign-up list as far as your priorities are. Yes, I would assume that the sponsor, that we deal with sponsor committee substitute. In fact, I would make the motion that we adopt sponsor committee substitute for Senate Bill 279, ask unanimous consent. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, will we have Mr. Stratton for revenue?
Mr.
think I would leave to them to explain to you what they're trying to do with the bill, because that is not really our position to express what they're trying to do with the bill. Our function would be to carry forth the reporting service to you and to the public for a compilation of the average wholesale price of salmon, canned salmon. In that, we have a fiscal note. There's a House bill, comparison or companion bill, House bill, which is House Bill 381, which has already been through the Special Fisheries Committee in the House, and they adopted the amendments that you see before you now. We agree with all those amendments. Number four on your amendment sheets references to the fact that there was an amendment sheet there.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman? All right. We have, just so we understand what's happening here, we have a sponsor substitute. Now, are these amendments, which I didn't get a copy of, in addition to the sponsor substitute, or are they included?
I assume they're in addition. That is,
they're not.
Your staff are doing that. We didn't put them together. From that, number four references the fact that we were negotiating with the Pacific Seafood Processors Association trying to determine what would be the best method to ask for canned salmon. I reference you to page 2 of the bill itself, which discusses the unit of sale categories. And there is a little bit of confusion here just by virtue of the fact is the way the processors report this to our department. As a result, it's not clear what would be the best way, but we believe that it would be best, and I think the PSPA would agree with us after discussions with them, that two further amendments be made. That being that in number B2 on line 6 would read 24-pound case of 1.5-pound can, and then parent 48 cans. And what that would do is that's how half pounds are sold. They're sold in a 24-pound case as opposed to a 48-pound case. In addition,
we'll go walk through that one.
Okay, it would be line 2 would be a 24-pound case.
That goes on line 2, page 2?
No, page 2, line 6, number 2, B2.
Are we on the sponsor substitute now?
Yeah.
Yes.
And you're replacing the language is there?
Correct.
Okay.
And the language would be 24-pound case of 1.5-pound cans.
48.
And like I said, this is just a kind of a cleanup measure or something else. And likewise, line 7, parent 3, D3, is a 12-pound case of 1/4-pound cans, parent 48 cans. Because that's how they're sold. They're sold in that And one other thing I probably would point out to you is that, and we don't have for your bill here, but we would have it, we do have it for the House bill, is it does have a fiscal note of $37,000 for FY84 and $31,000, $34,000, $37,000 for the following year. That basically would give us one permanent position in a computer terminal to keep track of all the information. Wow.
We have a fiscal note that.
Yes, yeah, the fiscal note will come out on that.
We have it in.
You may have it for the House bill. I'm not sure if you have it for this bill.
Yeah, for committee substitute. That's my substitute for 279.
Okay, you do. That's a missed mark as a committee substitute. We didn't know if you were a sponsor substitute or a committee substitute. We've just been talking to staff. And that, yeah, if you have that, then that's the same with that.
Mr. Chairman, there's also the fiscal note for the Commerce and Economic Development. Is that a current one? It looks like it's 5.83.
That is not.
That's for sponsor substitute.
Someone else can testify to that. We don't, the Commerce, we will address that. May I ask any other questions? tried to talk my way to it. It was for cans, not pinks, but now this is the way the bill would be. It would be for pinks as well as reds.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Mr. Lauber?
My name is Richard B. Lauber. I'm testifying on behalf of the Pacific City Processors Association. The amendments package is proposed, let me touch on that. We would encourage their adoption if, in fact, the committee feels so inclined to pass out the bill. In total, number four has been addressed by the Department of Revenue, and the problem we were having, so that you can understand the confusion, was that historically, salmon has been reported in 40-pound, 1-pound case lots, and that will still continue. And we had some problem with the reporting to revenue going in different, coming in different than 48 1-pound tall case lots. But we have their assurance that that can be converted, and for statistical purposes, it will or could be passed out 48 1-pound tall, so that there isn't confusion as to number of cases. In other words, historically we say there have been so many million cases of salmon back. Well, when they're talking about that, we're talking normally 48. The legislation, let me make it clear that some of my comments will indicate that we have some problems with the legislation. We have no problem with the fact that the wholesale price of canned salmon would be reported. Historically, I assume that if this legislature started in 1913, I assume that canned salmon started with paying tax in 1914. And the tax on canned salmon was for many years, until in fact the last 3 or 4 years, was based upon the average wholesale price of that salmon when it was sold in Seattle. That, of course, included all of the labor costs and cans and carton freight and so forth. And that was the way we paid our tax. And so the Department of Revenue have had those figures for the better part of this century. And they have been made available, and we are used to working with that. And we have no problem with the information being made available in the aggregate so that it's not proprietary information. So we have no objections to the information being released. But I want to take you back to the fact that that information was available because it was on our tax form. We paid our tax based upon the average wholesale price. At the present time, the legislature has seen fit several years ago to change the method of paying tax on canned salmon. At the present time, we are based upon the ex-vessel price, or the price that we pay to the fishermen. Therefore, there is no need, or there has been no requirement, that we report the average wholesale price of all canned salmon. Several years ago, there was a controversy over this because one area of the state, at that time it was Prince William Sound, has a sliding scale payment schedule where a majority of the price is paid up front, and then a portion of it is based upon the price of the salmon when it was sold. So an agreement was reached at that time, a compromise, that has worked out to what we have today, which is that for Prince William Sound purposes, there is a reporting of the average wholesale price of canned pink salmon. This time, no other area wanted it, and by law, if you didn't want it, it was the final report, and so now it will not be obtained unless this law passes. For I would correct the previous witness, salmon, it includes all canned salmon. Certainly, that's an insignificant amount that is kings and silvers and chums, but there are significant numbers of chum salmon that are canned. And so it's not just red salmon. It's all canned salmon imported under this legislation. Now, there are... Well, I can understand that, Mr. Chairman, and I will only touch on the essentials. This particular bill makes certain exceptions to the average wholesale price. You will note that there is an allowance for cash, and there's an allowance for outside sales organizations. We are asking that, along with all of the other amendments, that there be an exemption for promotional allowance. Let me explain this because it's very important to us. At the present time, the trade practices are that for advertising purposes or other promotional purposes, there are case discounts, and they may range from 50 cents up to $4 or on occasion even higher. But in that range, you may make a deal with a supermarket chain, and that supermarket chain agrees with you that they will promote salmon in their ads, or they will on the radio, or whatever. And you sign this agreement, and you agree to give a case discount allowance for the promotional purposes. There is, if this is not included in this bill, what will have to happen is that there will be no difference in the sale price. It's just that we will not have the assurance of the buyer that they will do what they say they will do. There will be no contract. They will not supply us tear sheets and so forth. I don't want to give you the impression, I don't want anyone else to, that there's going to be any change in the price. The price will be the same. If it's $100 a case is your price, and you enter into a promotional allowance for $4 per case, and the price is going to be $96 per case under any circumstances. But with ASME, and we've been attempting to promote this, promote salmon, particularly salmon, canned salmon recently, we need all the promotion we can get. And so there have been a lot of promotional allowances in the past year. This is not changing a practice that is not, we're not deducting any money from the fishermen. Not asking for anything. These are subject to audit, and it will be an up-and-up arrangement. If you don't give it a promotional allowance, then we will go for the $100 a case or whatever it happens to be the sales price. But we have to have that price in there. Otherwise, it can create significant problems within the industry. There are a number of things I would like to address, Mr. Chairman. However, I know you have other witnesses, and...
Have you got some proposed language for that?
Yes, the proposed language is under the amendment number 3, and it would be read C on page 3, line 29, add C, promotional allowance, which would allow the deduction for it.
I just got these proposed amendments just now.
All of, by the way, we encourage all of those other amendments, too, to the... bill. But 1 and 2 have been agreed upon.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator?
Yes, because I certainly always gotten very good information from you, Rick. What, I don't know how much that might mean, and is there debate over the item 3 inclusion?
Yes, I believe there will be.
Okay, why? Where the other side of the hat for us?
I would rather allow them
allow
to stay
them to.
And you support amendment number 1, number 2, then?
Number 1, 2, and 4. And 4 has already been addressed, and you would support that for the reasons I
mentioned. Any other questions, Mr. Clark?
Oh, I'm just going to ask Rick. Obviously, he's read the bill.
Pardon?
What is the repealer on? That's 4380.035. Repealer on page 3.
I believe that's the language that... provided for the basically the present law that where there's a vote and so forth. I'm not sure of that.
If I may say, that is the existing law.
Any further questions?
Mr. Chairman, no, as long as he's made any substantive comment, because I realize this has been a really hot issue over.
Yes, it really is. And
yeah.
Since I will be the only witness that is testifying in opposition to it, to my knowledge, I would like to reserve the opportunity to answer any questions after there has been testimony by others, because numerically I'm outnumbered. I expect.
Thank you. Here in Ellsworth. Well, I don't know. There's one neutral, and you're opposed. So,
cast.
Or are we next on the list? I just found one.
I'd rather Mitch came.
Okay. And Mitch.
Chairman, members of the committee, my name's Mitch Kink. I hold the position of general manager for Alaska Independent Fishermen's Marketing Association, better known as AIFMA. We represent approximately 500 boats, but moreover, we represent over 50% of the production in Bristol Bay.
Harvey, my question.
Pardon?
I say Harvey.
We, in the last couple of years, as you all are aware, that we've had difficulty out in the bay negotiating prices. And we, after last year, was, I guess, the low point, and AIFMA and the Bristol Bay fishermen decided that to take a new course. And we ventured out on a new course. It's a 3-year program, and it goes along with the sliding scale. Sliding scale is very important to us, and this bill is the very heart of the sliding scale. And Mr. Chairman, if I could use the bulletin board for a minute, the chalkboard, to show you what I mean. Percentage of that wholesale price. We said that the fishermen want so much of that wholesale price. So you can see when we're talking about a wholesale price and the accumulation of this information is extremely important to us. As of today, we have signed 7 major processors in the bay on the assumption that this bill was passed as is. And let me show you here. Simple as this, and here's the heart of the whole program. In this case here, we said that the fishermen are worth 44% of this fish, in other words, of the wholesale price. So that meant that the processors would then have 56%. This is a point that was negotiated. It was negotiated and accomplished. We have come down. Historically, the fishermen have been entitled to 46% on an average since 1966. We've come down to 44%. And this is the way this works. This is a wholesale price times the percentage the fishermen gain from this divided by 72. 72 is the negotiated pounds per case. So, then that would come out to the can price to the fishermen. If I can just give you an example. We'll say the case is $100. And we have 44% of $100 divided by 72, and it comes out to 61 cents a pound to the fishermen. Interrupt this by allowances, you therefore lower this price. Now, in this bill and in this situation, you have already, you have a broker's allowance, and you have a tax or a discount, cash discount credit, to the tune of 6.5%. Now, let's just reduce that 6.5%, and I did, it comes down now to $93.50, and if we run it through our program again, if we run it through our program again, you'll notice now that the fisherman is down to 57 cents as opposed to 61 cents. So the disturbance of this, now if we add on to a promotional allowance, we'll say another 2%, then you're talking about, it comes out to 55 cents to the fisherman. We feel that we have compromised. We have come down from 46% historical gains from that fish down to 44. We've negotiated this. Now, if we interrupt this, and I don't think this committee or this legislature, if passing this bill with this amendment to it, you in essence are in allowed in a post-negotiation session. I don't think the legislature or the committee wish to do this. We all in good faith, we negotiated on this premise, and we feel if there's any addition, reducing this down, therefore the pay to the fishermen would be reduced.
And I understand too, Mitch, that you negotiated the per pound or the fish per case of 72.
Yes. These numbers here are concrete now. They're negotiated, and they're in our contracts. The thing here, the wholesale price is only the only vulnerable thing that we have in the contract. If this is interrupted, then our formula is interrupted. See what I mean?
Okay. One more question while we're discussing, and I'll open it up for questions. What if this bill doesn't pass this session? How do you arrive at the...
If this bill doesn't arrive, then we are we have either or in our contracts. We would have to take the numbers and the figures from the packers or from the can, from the companies.
So it's a question then of taking the statutory, something that's created by statute or whatever the companies provide you.
And Senator, the fact is that when we first started negotiations, we signed our first contract December 1st with a major processor. And we signed it with the intent of the bill that you have before us without the amendment. And it was then, it was the request of AFMA and NELBRO to have this bill brought before the legislature.
Well, conversely, if we wipe out a few of these others, it would raise that 102 the other way, wouldn't it? Isn't that correct?
What do you mean?
I mean, you say by adopting amendments here reduces the net amount. By deleting parts of the original bill, we could raise this other end also, which would, and the net result would be an increase of the price per pound, right?
It won't. If you wish.
I mean, the point being is that you must have negotiated a price based upon a certain formula.
This is it.
Okay, that formula. If we change whatever we do to the bill, you still know what the original formula is you agreed on.
That's right.
Correct? And you've already cranked in different options. You know that, for example, you're reducing it 4 cents by adopting this amendment. Whether we do or not, you still have the original formula, which I assume you signed the contract on, no matter what we do. If you can calculate what we do as may affect one way or the other, that can be cranked back into the wholesale price.
The fact is,
if you negotiate a price, we negotiate, what we do 6 months later, you're in deep trouble.
Well, we negotiated a price on the sliding scale, and we negotiated on the price on the packet, and we took the copy, the same copy that you already have in law for Peaks.
Yeah.
All right. So we've negotiated on that. And we have already taken, we've already made the allowance. They already have the allowance of 5 cents, 5% for brokerage fee. They already have, and we understand that. We accepted that.
I understand that also, but maybe I'm missing something, but you signed the contract based upon a certain criteria, right?
Mm-hmm.
If we change the criteria, that doesn't change your contract because you've already signed off on that particular criteria.
No.
So as long as you know how much we affect it one way or the other on a deep end, you can either add or subtract to get it back to where you originally started. So unless you sign an open-end contract, which leaves this year wholesale price subject to all kinds of fluctuations by whatever might happen here. That's not a regular contract.
Oh, well, we have the two options in the contract. And we did it, we did negotiate in good faith with the backing of everybody in the state. And so we negotiated. And we negotiated on what was there now, but not pertaining to our species. But what was there now? And we accepted that. We accept that. We accept the 5%, we accept the 1.5%. But now, in this amendment that comes before you, they're asked for additional allowance, which was not in the original statutes.
That's right. You want to get over here so that we... Yes.
Just for clarification, Mitch, we could put in a whole lot of stuff. Right now, we've got 5% for the commissions to independents. We've got cash discounts not to exceed 1.5%. We could put in, as Mr. Lauber suggests, the discounts for ASME, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But back to Senator Lassen's point, if you negotiate contract and it's for 3 years and it's based on any one of those or a whole package being included, you negotiated on a certain price that included it either included or didn't include these extra charges. So how can what we're saying by this bill is what comes in for information to the Department of Revenue, but you could, if you wanted, why couldn't you add back, let's say they put a figure in that's got the 5% out and 1.5%. You could add those back if that's what you want to, the price that you want to negotiate. Are we by this bill telling you how to negotiate? We're just saying how we're going to collect information. So I'm a little bit like Senator Lassen.
To us, the importance is of the bill to be passed.
Yeah, I understand.
Okay.
You now, want the information. We
yes.
know that.
And we want it passed as it was introduced and as the reference of the what we already had in the legislation, only it would be adding the reds to the pinks.
Right.
All right. If we wanted to and sacrifice the security of this bill passing, we could put an amendment to reduce the brokerage fee to 3%. But we feel that's not the way to do business.
Chairman, but still, the fact remains is that if you settle on a certain criteria to establish that price, anything we do which changes that criteria, and you know what the given amount is, that when it comes out, you can add it back under, take it back off the end, you're still looking at the original wholesale price of what you agreed on.
But the whole
if you know what the factors, what the change factor amounts to, you can either add it on or take it off, however it affects the wholesale price. The point being is that your contract was negotiated upon these specific items, period.
That's right.
Whether we add or take out doesn't make much difference. As long as you know what the net result is, you can put it back on and take it off. Doesn't make that much difference. So, am I right in that, Rick, or wrong? I don't know.
Well, I'd like to comment after.
Okay, but it seems to me that that if you had a way of determining how we affect it one way or the other, if we do affect it,
you would affect it by the fact that
But if we take 5 cents off, it's, as long as you know that we've affected it by 5 cents, the contract says this is a criteria, we put that 5 cents back on up there. You got the wholesale price, you know exactly what it is.
I don't, well, I'm in the dark now.
Let me try one more time, because I understand where you are, and I'm confused too. All right, we end up, we, the state, with a wholesale price.
All right.
That it's an adjusted wholesale price, because we've had this 5% out, we've had the 1.5% out, and so then we have a price, okay? Mm. Now, what is to say we're not trying to get in and negotiate your contract? That's up to you, the ground rules you use. You can start wherever you want to start. Why can't you take the figure we come up with, the adjusted wholesale price, and say, we don't want to use that as the basis. We want to put 5% back in for that commission. We don't want to adjust it, negotiate at 93.5. We want to negotiate at 98.5. Why can't you add that 5% in? Why is the fact that you come out with a certain figure, you can add from that or deduct from it? Can't you? We're missing something here.
No, I don't think we can, because in our discussions, we have based it on what you have already on the statutes. You see what I mean?
I guess maybe we don't know how you're doing it. What's in the statute now? Maybe that's how.
I think it would have been well for some people to come to us and explain what was going on prior to bringing this bill. I happen to represent Crystal Bay, and this was the first time outside the bill being introduced that I had any idea that it may play, because I'm certainly not in the negotiation game.
No, nor
you
am
know,
I.
Nor is, and Senator Eliason is official. You can see where we're coming from. This is kind of what you're saying. Is kind of hitting me right between the eyes. And I represent the Bay out there. Gas hasn't said anything that was interpreted this way. I thought we were setting the standard. When we set the standard, you folks had negotiated whatever you negotiated out there, and this was one element in that standard. But it wasn't part of the negotiations. And so that we were just trying to provide, this statute, as I understand it, would provide some upfront information on canned salmon statewide. They want this information. Kodiak, they want this information. Further negotiations in Kodiak, I'm sure Bob Lake and his crew want to know where Pennsylvania is on for their negotiation. But I, if what you're saying is a fact, is the first I've heard that what this bill does affects the end price of the fish in a given place.
The bill doesn't. It's the amendment to the bill that does it.
I don't see that.
Well, I don't see that.
But
let's try it this way, Mr. Chairman. What if we do nothing? You have a contract signed based upon the wholesale price of fish as established by something that don't exist anymore. But you have what did exist. If you had a way of computing wholesale price using that criteria, aren't you back in the same contract?
We have two options to go in our contract.
Okay, I guess there's... Satisfy a contract you negotiated among a private party, you know?
No, we're not saying that you have to pass the bill. What we're saying is that you have a statute on the books now. And simply you're gonna add, instead of red salmon, instead of pinks only, you're gonna add reds to it. And in the statute it says allowable expense for cash discounts, allowance sales not to exceed 1.5%. Commission actually pays an independent broker not to exceed 5%.
Well, let me ask you this, Mitch, if I might, just for the sake of information, because I've got something on my mind.
my table there that I didn't even know was there up until 10 minutes ago. I don't bother us as many fields in London, but let's say we just add threats to the existing law instead of repealing it and throw this whole bill out the window. What does that do?
Well, they want an amendment to add a different red salmon or pink salmon.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Yeah. That instead of, we've got an existing law on price report, and I'm not that familiar with it. I haven't read it, really. And I hear you telling me that you've entered into open-ended negotiations that what they really were was that red salmon would be included in that law.
The law just now addresses pinks. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
What we're saying is that the bill was introduced to correspond with our negotiated contract, which was negotiated on existing